there's no point in getting mad about something that you can't change. Can't change what happened in the race in the past. All you can do is look at it, learn from it, and make a different choice the next race.
You never know how strong you are until being strong is your only option.
It's really with one end goal in mind of a better cycling experience.
There's a huge overlap.
We're covering all these aspects of cycling.
It's not just about the high-level cyclists. It's not just about the health club.
Now it's about a bike, a power meter, technology, data.
It's about cycling, no matter where you do it and how you do it.
That's all I got.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap, presented by Stages Cycling. I'm Bryce Hansen, and on this show, we talk about all things cycling, no matter how or where you do it. Our guest today is one of the special athletes that's had the opportunity to race fixed gear criteriums across the world in the Red Hook Crit Series. We talk about the impact that racing had on her life, founding and managing a women's team, e-racing, and the future of the sport. Kelly Samuelson is a friend of mine and a partner with Stages Cycling with her team LA Sweat. Be sure to keep up with the team on Instagram at LA_sweat and at LA-sweat.com. You can also find Kelly at KellySam on Instagram. Well, Kelly, thank you for joining me.
How's it going?
I'm good. You have obviously a lot of involvement in cycling, the industry, work, play, racing, competing from all ends of the spectrum. But you do have a lot of experience in racing, and I want to go way back to the Chinelli Chrome days racing fixed gear bikes. And we talked with Lanita last week, who raced on the track. So listeners should know a little bit about track racing, no brakes, fixed gear, no coasting. But senders like yourself decided, let's race a criterium on those bikes out in the streets, corners, with other people around.
Yeah. So even before Chinelli Chrome, I raced for a brand called Affinity out of Brooklyn. So when Red Hook started, it was David Trimble's birthday party. Totally invite only. Nobody knew what it was. And for the first, probably 3 or 4 years that it became a thing, it was invite only. He only invited 100 people. And then it got to the point where more and more people were trying to get in. I mean, this thing was selling out faster than Dirty Kanza, faster than any gravel event that you can think of.
And at this point, it was still in the streets of Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, so the first two were around the neighborhood of Red Hook, Brooklyn.
Okay.
I was very, very fresh into cycling racing at that point. So a lot of my friends were doing it from MASH and Macaframa and all those different kind of crews. We didn't really call them teams because there wasn't a team atmosphere. They were racing alley cats and making rad video edits and taking on that skate video mentality, which is super rad, because I think that when you add the fact that you can't stop and you're kind of clipped in and you're doing really crazy things that even some of the most talented bike racers are no, I'm not doing that. So then it moved. When it started becoming a bit more organized, it moved to the Brooklyn Cruise Terminal. So where the ferries would come in to Red Hook, which is amazing because it gave a space for all the riders to be inside and put their stuff. And you weren't kind of just sitting on the side of the street, and it got, people started wearing spandex. And it was, it became a discipline. And it really was David Trimble's history in cycling and racing and his family and everything that they've done, which that would be a whole other podcast on its own. That family is incredible. They are so supportive of everyone that shows up. So it's different in the sense of traditional bike racing, where you are sort of stuck in your little siloed team and no one really talks to each other. That is not how Red Hook is. Red Hook is a mashup of track bike racing, crit racing, teams, but then that mountain bike atmosphere at a race where everyone is just buddies and it doesn't really matter what kind of bike you have or, what you're wearing. Everyone just was showing up to race hard and have a good time. So I feel super, super privileged and lucky to have found racing kind of through that avenue.
Right.
So the first Red Hook I did would have been 2009, 11, I think. After that, Chinelli had approached me and said that they were putting together this team and they wouldn't tell us who it was with or what it was. And I knew, you know, Neil Bezdek, who was on the team with me, he is super talented. He had won Red Hook a bunch of times before that and raced for Chinelli solo. Chinelli was the title sponsor of Red Hook at the time. So they were putting together this team, and it really was one of the first sort of like organized, everyone's wearing the same kit, same equipment, like road bike team mentality brought into fixed gear. I kind of was like, yeah, okay, sure. Not really knowing anyone. And then we showed up to Brooklyn and it was like me and Neil and a bunch of Italians. And we were just kind of like thrown into this little family. It was really great. It's interesting to think back on it and just, I was thinking about it today, actually. I was like, oh man, like if it weren't for Chinelli kind of reaching out and wanting to do stuff with me, the chain of events that happened throughout my cycling career probably wouldn't have happened. And being able to like call Antonio Colombo a friend and, you know, sort of a mentor is not something that everyone in the cycling industry gets to do. And it's, you know, I feel really privileged and lucky to have that for sure. And then it just kind of skyrocketed. More and more teams started forming. It was really cool to see, especially once the women's field opened up. You know, fixed gear in general is pretty male dominated. And I had had a bunch of conversations with a bunch of different people, and there was, you know, all this talk about like, should Red Hook have a women's field or should they not? And, you know, luckily David chose to do it, and it just grew and grew and grew. Like the first race, you know, there was still, I think it was only like 35 girls, but it also represented 10 different countries. So you're looking, people were traveling very far distances to go to this race. And because of not only the racing, because it was super high quality, but also the support of riders and then just the community around it, because that event, I don't know if it will ever come back the way that it was in the beginning, but I hope that one day cycling in general and racing, especially domestic crits, will kind of take on that community mentality a bit more with, you know, it means a lot to have a pre-event, you know, like
yeah,
where all the riders can get together. And
right.
The one thing that I really loved about Red Hook and about that atmosphere was once the race stopped, it didn't matter. Like everyone left the race on the race course and never took anything off. And it was just like, you know, those people are still to this day some of my closest friends. So that's difficult to do, especially when riders are changing and teams are changing and, you know, all that. So he definitely built something really special. I hope something like it comes back.
No doubt. I mean, I was fortunate.
I miss it for sure.
Yeah, I do too. And I was fortunate to go to years 10 and 11 in Brooklyn or Red Hook. But of course, the race evolved. It went to Milan, yeah. London, Barcelona. It, you know, it was just like became this global event. And it was really, really eye-opening to see the way it was run. It kind of even in the years I went, which is
the very
later
end.
Part of this, the very end. Yeah, I mean, I saw the last one. But it was very like MotoGP influenced.
Oh, super.
The way that the grid start and
that has changed like crazy, right? So in the beginning and throughout, there were like qualifying rounds to make it to the final event. And the grid was basically how you placed within qualifying. It was
right.
An individual time trial while other people were on the course, essentially, with the timing chip. So your fastest lap put you where you were in the grid. And it was, there was no like pyramid form like MotoGP is. So that has changed. And I think it really, the way David was able to take that feedback and evolve the race, like I remember within 1 year, mm-hmm. the qualifying and starting grid setup changed from race to race because of the feedback that he got. And that's not something that a lot of race directors do. You know, they take the feedback, but implementing the change so quickly is not something that usually happens. And with a
which
series,
is probably why it grew as quick as it did.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like I said, he's super supportive. Like his dad races Red Hook every year. Like
that's so rad.
So yeah, I think just the way that he went about it, I know for a fact that he, you know, the negative comments and things like that, that he would get. And he really did just take the rider's experience and safety as his number one priority. And it showed. Like someone messaged me the other day, actually responded to a story and said like, oh, it was so sad to see Red Hook come and go so quickly. And I was kind of like, Red Hook was around for 11 years. That's not very quick. Like what are you, and they had only heard of it in 2000 or in, so it would have been 2018.
Probably when some magazine got a hold of it and, you know, then they read it in Bicycling Magazine, or probably when you were on the cover of Bicycle Magazine.
No, that was 2015. That was a while ago. Now it feels like, you know, a really long time ago. But yeah, I mean, it was cool to see that it was still impacting people even up until like the very last years of it.
Well, and I mean, that would probably be a whole other podcast to talk about where the sport's going, and we could spend a lot of time on that. But then from there, you get this idea, grab a hold of a women's crit team. You were based in LA at the time. Then came LA Sweat.
First came the Rita women's team, which was a super small local women's race team with Rita Cycles. I was working there at the time and they had a men's like club team. And I was like, why don't we have a separate women's team? And the founder was like, it's all you, go for it. Like, if you want to do it, do it. And I had a lot of connections within sponsors and stuff like that from Red Hook, right? So Rita Women's Road Team and Chinelli Chrome were kind of happening at the same time.
Okay.
So I was able to merge a lot of those sponsors, which made my life really easy.
Sure.
So that was for 2 years. It grew really quickly. It was really interesting. And, you know, my sort of goals were growing and I was just kind of like, I really loved crits, obviously coming from fixed crits. There was a ton in Southern California. And I kept looking at the teams kind of showing up to the regional and local races. And I was like, none of these teams seem very fun. To be totally honest, like no filter.
Yeah.
They just weren't very welcoming. And like, if you didn't fall into a certain category, like half the time, most of the women wouldn't even speak to you or acknowledge your presence. Right. So I don't want to be a part of that. Right. So I basically was like, well, I'm going to get my friends that are all riding individually and we're going to start our own team. And then as that continued to grow, my love for crits and also just seeing so many super talented regional riders not getting the chance to showcase their talents on a national scale because, you know, their teams didn't travel. They didn't have the means to travel by themselves, or a lot of the races you had to have a team. So I was like, well, you just kind of get stuck in this little circle and you can't really grow past a certain level. So then came LA Sweat and I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to own a women's professional team now. This seems like fun, having no experience whatsoever. You know, I'd only managed myself as a human in my early 20s, which doesn't say a lot. And now I have to like manage other people. But it's been super rewarding. And now we're on year 6 and it's kind of crazy. Never in a million years did I think 5 years ago when I was like, I'm going to start this team, that I would still be doing it, or 6 years ago that I would still be doing it 6 years later and have, you know, one of the most fun and positive experiences probably of my life. And I've gotten to travel around the world and the country with people that are super close to me. They're not just teammates. I think that's something that's really different about what we've built. And I can't even say I have to say we, because it literally does take every single person involved and on the team to have that sort of atmosphere and that camaraderie. And even now, kind of like where we are, like so disconnected, but you know, we really make a point to connect with each other and be there for one another off the bike more than even on the bike.
Well, and I think that helps, you know, when race day does come, you know, you're racing with some of your closest friends and willing to, do whatever for them, right? It's like that.
Absolutely. And the level of trust that is built off the bike is not something you could ride with someone every single day for years on end. But if you don't have that like friendship or like emotional connection with someone, you're not going to fully trust within the race. And there is no question whatsoever come race day that every single one of those girls would lay themselves out for whoever.
Yeah, which is really special.
There's like zero ego on the team, which is like really, really, really rare.
Especially in a sport that can naturally sometimes breed a me mentality. That's so important because it is a team sport, especially in crit. I mean, in any bike racing really, but crit racing is, it's easily seen with the tactics, the way they play out.
Yeah. And they think, you know, especially within women's crit racing, our races are shorter. We have less amount of time to kind of wait for something to happen. And the races are super exciting and active, and teams are rolling up with true proper plans and tactics in place. And you can see that play out, and it's super fascinating. I really miss racing.
Yeah, I know. We all do.
I miss directing. I miss sitting in the pit. I miss getting sunburned. Like,
that's something I'm glad you mentioned it, because I wanted to bring it up a little bit. And a lot of the people that probably listen might not be as well versed in criterium racing and might not know that most teams, well-run teams, their riders have an earpiece in and they have a director coaching them through the race.
I mean, I think coaching is a strong term, but my goal with the radio and kind of my role is just to provide information. So time splits. A lot of the times when you're inside the race, you can't hear what is happening in terms of the commentators or things like that, you know, and you're only hearing one time every half a mile, depending on how long the course is. So if you're on the backside of the course and there's a break and they announce the time before you even get to the start finish line, you're not going to hear it. You're not going to know. You could be stuck in no man's land between the break and the peloton and have zero idea how much time is between what. So my job is to give those time splits. And in all honesty, I just am like extra hype woman.
Yeah.
Like,
which is super valuable, especially in a crit, yeah, when you're like, just in the pain cave. And
it's funny though, because like sometimes towards the end of the race, I get so excited and so nervous that I've seen my girls just like rip their earpieces out.
Oh no.
Like mid race, they're like, I can't take it. I need to focus. Cause I'm like, no. But it's super fun. I don't know. I just, it's for me when this is also another thing, as I was like starting this team and kind of growing within my own career, I got hit with like injury after injury, and I've had two total hip reconstructions. So racing definitely fell to the back burner for sure. And I fully underestimated the amount of time and energy and work that it took to run a team, you know, because I'm up first. I'm making breakfast. I'm making bottles. I'm making ice socks. I'm packing the car while they're napping. I'm getting, you know, post-race stuff ready and all that stuff. I'm going to the course early, parking the car, riding my bike back to the host house, like getting them, then riding back down there, or, you know. So it's really nonstop come race day for me. And I really underestimated that level of commitment and exertion.
Yeah.
But now it's like having been injured and having to, you know, physically take a break from racing, mentally, it's been so rewarding to have that and to see their successes and what they've come to accomplish within their careers that they wouldn't have had the opportunity to before.
So going into 2020, you have a stacked squad.
Yeah.
I know this is going to be hard to talk about.
No, it's fine. It's okay.
A stacked squad. And obviously everyone on your team has big ambitions and you're pumped and you're ready. And, you know, everyone shows up to, or getting ready, I guess, to go to the first race, and it doesn't happen. I would say LA Sweat was the one team that didn't disappear. You guys went straight to social. You went straight to just like engagement. Like, okay, let's stay relevant in the best way we can. That's something I noticed. You know, obviously global pandemic, there's more important things at stake, right? Like you're honestly, obviously now thinking, okay, personal health and like community health and all these crazy things happening. But I feel like you still did really well at keeping the team together and keeping them focused on something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something that LA Sweat has always done, obviously we don't have our traditional name. We're not named after a company. Myself and a handful of others on the team are all marketers and branding agents and advertisers. And we've worked in that realm for a long time, and we see the value in having that presence. And we know that it's really important, and it's a really good way to communicate with people with authenticity and just being ourselves and showcasing who we are. And our name will never change. So the Lakers don't change their name because they get a new sponsor.
Right.
Why? Like, I didn't fully understand. I understood it, but like, I didn't understand why more teams weren't kind of going that route 6 years ago. So when I started it, right, like, I was like, I want a name. It'll always be this name. And I always wanted it to be a constant for fans and community, and for them to know that no matter what, they can always find out what we're doing. So when all of this stuff happened in 2020, we were already having a late season start. We weren't D1 this year based on a plethora of decisions that was made by the team as a whole. We really missed events like Intelligentsia and Toad, and even Nationals at some point because of the conflict of the USA Crits schedule. So we really wanted to kind of open up our ability to go to the races that we wanted to, especially the multi-day events, which are super important because there are fewer and fewer each year. We had really high hopes in March, not gonna lie. Kind of started and we're like, all right, we still have a month, right? Like, everyone just stay home for 2 weeks and, you know, we'll get through it and then we'll be ready to go. Then Seattle canceled and we're like, oh, we'll still have team camp. We can still get together and at least spend some time together. And then obviously we realized that that was not going to be feasible. And even early in March, my number one concern was the health of my riders. So I was not about to ask any of my riders to put their health at risk to travel, to do anything that was going to not only, you know, potentially catch the virus, but also what if they're out doing something for a photo shoot and they crash and they get hurt and they have to go to the hospital? Like, I took it very seriously, and my number one goal was their safety. And so, yeah, we took to the internet. Why not?
Sure.
We didn't have anything, you know, we didn't have anything else to really look forward to at that point. Once Seattle canceled, I pretty much knew and had come to terms with the fact that we weren't going to have racing at least until, you know, June, July. Obviously now that's even pushed farther back, and that's okay. You know, I think a lot of times what happens is we get stuck in this travel, 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 race season. You're going, 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 going. You miss time with your family. You miss time recovering from something, you miss time focusing on, you know, your outside career or school. And as sad as it has been to not be able to like be in the same place with everyone, it really has given space for their other accomplishments. You know, mm-hmm. I'm overly organized and I put together a full calendar of like a lockdown calendar that everyone had their tasks, and we wanted to create content that was going to keep people motivated, going to keep people kind of lighthearted, you know, like I think making sure that we were riding together on a regular basis virtually has been super helpful. We wanted to get our sponsors involved. We wanted to be able to support them any way that we could based on the fact that we couldn't be at events. So, you know, hey, let's do a contest. We were going to do this contest anyways. Let's just do it virtually now. And it's been great. You know, we opened up a Discord channel where people can actually talk to us and like find out what's going on in our personal lives. And we've opened that door for sure. And it's been really fun to like make silly videos and talk about baking bread and cocktails. Like, you know, it really is just kind of who we are as people. And we're just showing that even more, I think, now. And I think that a lot of these things that we've adopted because of COVID, we will continue to do outside of it.
Right. There's a positive in everything if you choose to look for it, right? And I think there are a few things that people are learning that, you know, maybe tools that they didn't explore, like riding, you know, virtually indoors, that all of a sudden you go, wow, okay, I don't want to do this all the time like I have to right now, but...
Oh, I do. I'm fully addicted to my trainer. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah. Hey, it's great. It's fun. I mean, it is. There's the tools that have come available and become so fun. And so I do see this trend of, you know, riding indoors and also e-racing, which was already kind of becoming a thing. I know last year some big teams, of course, you know, the Canyon SRAM women's team did some races. And but now I feel like it's accelerated. We're getting there quicker. Nobody knows what this is going to be, but I'm curious to hear what you think. I mean,
it's different. It's a game, right? Like,
right.
I think that's one thing that we really need to remember when we do these races, is that they're not a real life representation. They're meant to be fun. They're meant to get us together. They're meant to provide an outlet for athletes who aren't able to race in real life. I don't think anyone joins an e-race thinking that it is going to be exactly like a regular race. There's always going to be different variables. Everyone has a different trainer. Like, there's just so many things that you can't control. And I think as long as we take that with a grain of salt, I think it could be really great, right? Like, our events have been canceled. Not only does that mean that the teams don't get to go, but also the event could lose their spot for years to come. It couldn't just be a 1-year cancellation. It could turn into a forever cancellation. So if they're able to host a virtual event and get their community involved and do, you know, a live feed and have some commentary and talk to riders, it's not only about the racers. It really is about the whole community of the spectators, the course marshals, like all of the people that make a race in real life happen still want to be involved virtually. And I think that as long as we take that mentality into it and understand the uncontrollable variables, it could be really great. And one, you know, just like teams have sponsors, events have sponsors that they have to fulfill their commitments to. And if they aren't able to do it because of what's going on, like, at least they can do it in a way on a smaller scale. My business mind is always at the forefront of, like, you know, it is business. It's fun. It's a passion project for sure. I don't make any money doing this. It costs me money to do it. But at the end of it, it is a business, and you have to think about it that way. These are, you know, transactions, whether they be monetary or not, of an expectation on all levels. So if we can use e-racing and esports to help alleviate some of that stress going into when we can race in real life, why not?
I think it's really exciting. And I know you're always working with, you know, different partners and people, and you have maybe some
everything
that you do. And you, I think, I know you have some things up your sleeve in the future. So we're excited to see what might come together here, hopefully, in the near future. One amazing thing about LA Sweat is you're so accessible. One way for people to reach out and get connected is hashtag Sweat Inside with LA Sweat. That's kind of what you've been using for all your indoor rides. But what are some other ways that people want to connect with your riders and ride with them if they can? How can they do that?
So here's a funny thing that I don't think any other team allows. I have given access to all of our social media to every single one of our riders.
Cool.
So you can literally just message the team on Instagram and you can get any one of us answering the question. Sort of like surprise. You never know who you're going to get.
Yeah. The mystery LA Sweat box.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we did, and we might do it again. We've done a lot of Ask Us Anythings, Instagram Lives, where a couple of girls will just get on and talk. You know, everyone's super open. Like, obviously, as long as you're respectful, we haven't really had an issue with that either. And I think that has to do with how we've presented ourselves from the get-go. It all goes back to, like, I don't ever want to be the team that other people look at and be like, oh, I don't know if I'd want to be part of that team because they're not very personable or whatever. I want to be the team that's like, oh, they look like they're having so much fun. I want to be on that team.
Yeah. Which I would say is why you've collected the riders that you have.
I know. I got so lucky.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I hope that you're able to get back to racing on the asphalt soon.
I know.
We all do. Hopefully, you know, as on safe as possible on the tarmac. That's right.
Hopefully not wearing masks. I mean, that would add a whole new element. It might be fun.
Maybe. We could go, like I mentioned earlier, a MotoGP influence. We could wear full face helmets.
I'm into it.
On the crit bike.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
I really hope that like crit racing adopts some of that F1 mentality like Red Hook did.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it needs to.
Like because they do top 10 call ups now, why not put them in a pyramid grid?
Easy enough. We'll write a letter.
Don't worry, I'll be making phone calls.
Yeah, there you go. Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
This has been fun.
Thank you.
Remember to connect with LA Sweat on Instagram at LA_sweat, where they will be able to let you know when you can ride with them virtually. Shoot them a message and you never know who might get back to you. If you enjoyed the show, let us know and be sure to subscribe to know when new episodes are available. Thanks for joining us. This is Bridge the Gap.